If psychology and pop culture had a baby, they'd call it the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our illustrious panel of shrinks analyze and psychoanalyze what's happening in entertainment and pop culture. We're coming to you from Nashville and Charlotte. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, an author, and a bad magician. And our regular panel is all here. Frank Gaskell is a psychologist. He's the author of the popular Max Gamer graphic novel. He's also our resident insane person who's usually worked up. Last week, you were not worked up. You were actually in a good mood. So, Frank, in a good mood again this week or worked up?
I'm sick and tired of politics. Sick and tired. If I see one more political commercial, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't listen to
you
radio.
You watch commercials?
I watch CNN.
I can't take it.
Use your words, Frank.
I can't take it. It's like America has become beyond stupid. So there's that.
Take it like a man, Frank. Just take it and take it like a man. Come on.
It's the way these stupid commercials are filmed. They are stupid. And the things that they're saying, like, it's so obvious.
Stupid.
It's so obvious. They are just, oh my gosh.
I know.
They're just flat out lying about stuff. And I know that millions, if not hundreds of millions of people are like, yeah, that makes sense to me.
God. I mean, if you can't trust commercials, what can you trust? I mean, what is this world coming to?
I trust Lego commercials.
I'm just sitting here thinking what it would be like to be in Frank's head for like just 30 seconds. During that 30-second commercial.
I want to watch a commercial in Frank's head. Like, America. And like, I know. Stupid.
It would just be a nightmare to be in that head.
Actually, I wouldn't be saying that because I'd be sucking my thumb trying to self-soothe myself, you know, in the moment.
Well, Emma Kate Wright is here. She is a pre-doctoral intern in psychology. And we hate the term pre-doctoral intern because it sounds like something like you haven't even started, but actually it means you're at the end of a doctoral program. So first, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. But are you worked up about anything yourself?
I am actually. I rediscovered that every time I hit my head, I have an immediate anger response. Now, let me clarify.
Somebody give me a hammer.
Okay. Well, I was simply going to pick up a bag, my handbag, off of the floor, and I had a very awesome spatial issue and slammed my head into the corner of a chair. So I have a mark on my forehead. And,
the beast.
But it was like my immediate reaction was to just get pissed off. And I don't know why. Like, does anyone else have
versus
that?
All those people that like bang their head and they get happy?
Right.
I'm so glad this gnash is now on my forehead.
I'm pretty sure that's like normal.
Oh.
I get hurt and then I'm mad that I got hurt.
Let's go from I'm getting my doctorate in psychology to why do I get mad when I bump into things?
But it's like I get really mad. And so I don't know. Whatever. I get really pissed off when it happens.
That's a great story.
A lot of good insight into the human psyche there.
I get happy.
Like, why do I get happy when somebody gives me a present? Every time I get a present, I feel happy.
Said the guy that says, I get angry when commercials aren't truthful.
Well,
like, what am I supposed to do?
It's normal.
Well, yeah, it is very normal.
Yep. Well, okay. So we've learned a lot about Emma Kate, mostly that she knows very little about psychology. And Jonathan Hederle's here. He's a counselor, a critic, and a sarcasm all-star. And Jonathan, are you worked up about anything this week? Or are you okay?
My forehead is fine, and I tend to avoid watching commercials. So I think I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah. I was like, when Frank's talking about commercials, I'm like, what century are you living in? I haven't seen a commercial in years, I don't think.
Do you watch live television?
But I mute the commercials.
That's when he goes and gets something to eat.
Oh, well.
Or now.
Yeah.
I don't get off the couch when I'm watching football.
Yeah. I guess I would say in a sports event I might see some commercials.
Okay,
but
see there?
Not like it.
That's all I watch TV for.
Well, Jonathan, each week is keeping his ear to the ground for all the interesting stories about psychology and popular culture in the cultural conversation, and we call it being human.
So recently, Robin Williams' widow wrote a personal essay about her late husband's mental health and what drove him to suicide. And so Robin Williams suffered from a severe form of depression that forced him to take his own life. And Susan Snyder Williams wrote in a scientific journal essay called "The Terrorist Inside My Husband's Brain," and it chronicled the family experience of living with his psychological disorder and their struggles to find a proper diagnosis. And he struggled from what was an acute paranoia and out-of-character emotional responses that turned out to be caused by Lewy body disease, a form of dementia associated with Parkinson's disease.
Yeah, I actually took the time to go and find her essay, and it was really well written. When you read it, you really can see how they felt so in the dark with the condition. They knew something was wrong, something was off. They were going to see all these doctors, kept getting no's on diagnoses, and yet he was really significantly impacted by something happening in his brain. And within that article, she talked about how he had lost 40% of the dopamine neurons in his brain. And for those who don't know, dopamine is the happy neurotransmitter that makes you feel good. And so it makes complete sense that he would struggle with severe debilitating depression. But on top of that, he had the significant anxiety, the memory loss. And I think it was just beautifully written in the sense that you could really see how the family was impacted by this sort of condition.
What came to my mind when I read this is right after he committed suicide, there were lots of people that had opinions about it, about, you know, how he was such a happy guy and how he's hiding and other people that had. And it really makes the point of we don't know what's going on in people's lives. I mean, we really don't. And I'm not saying that he was justified in committing suicide, but when you read this account of how tortured he was, it's like we didn't know 90% of what was going on in this guy's head, even though we knew that he had struggled with substance abuse, mental illness, and all that kind of stuff. We really didn't know the extent of it. So it does, I mean, to me, my thoughts go to how quick people are to jump on things and have an opinion about someone else's life when they don't really even know what's going on in their life.
Mm-hmm. Especially given that, you know, he had those addictions, and once people are kind of portrayed in that light, it's really hard to escape that. So I bet most people were like, oh, he probably had a relapse of some sort. And so you're absolutely correct in thinking, you know, everyone kind of was quick to judge what happened to him.
And I think that's our nature, is if we have something that we don't understand, we fill in the data with whatever we have because we have to explain it to ourselves. We can't just sit without, I mean, that's what makes us curious people.
Well, and I also think that over time we create these personas and image of celebrities and actors, and then it can be very difficult sometimes when their real personal lives contradict what we think we know about them. And yet there's so much data and just anecdotal evidence that comedians oftentimes they develop that talent and skill from real darkness and hardship in their own personal lives. So it really shouldn't be that surprising that someone that's so immensely funny and entertaining and loved to bring joy into people's lives had a real dark and heavy struggle in his own personal life.
Maybe that's why I make you laugh so much, Hedderly.
You definitely have a dark past.
And why you make me cry.
Yes.
I thought getting presents made you cry and hitting your head made you laugh.
Oh, wait. Yeah, that's right. I learned that in grad school. Thank you, David.
Mm-hmm. You learn a lot in grad school.
Yes, you do. All right. So this next article looks at a new study that's in the Journal of Applied Psychology that attempts to explore why women are less likely to be forgiven for inappropriate behavior in the workforce, whereas men that are unfair are more likely to be left off the hook. And so they did a study where participants read about staff complaining that their manager had been unjust in some way and were being disrespectful or ignoring the individual's preferences. And the punishments they chose for female managers were significantly harsher than those they chose for male managers. And so it just kind of points back to this possibility that female judges or female bosses are judged more harshly than their male counterparts for being insensitive and disrespectful.
Hear, hear. I completely agree with this article, and I would like to categorize this article under the section No Duh Sherlock. I mean, of course. Women, there are stereotypes in terms of how a woman treats another person and stereotypes of how a man can like judge you and be harsh in the workplace, and that's like the word the boss. You know, that's how the boss treats you. But you wouldn't expect a woman to do the same thing, and that's where I think Hillary and all these other women who are leaders are called, you know, the B word, and are looked upon as just cold and unfeeling, and guys get away with it, women don't.
Yeah, I think it's easier for us to say, oh, guys are more aggressive.
Stop talking to me like that. Please stop. That's, I find you to be very insensitive right now.
I'm being so insensitive. But yeah, no, I think like what Frank just did, guys are more aggressive, and we kind of just say in general, all right, that's how men can be, thanks testosterone, and we let it go. It's not that big of a deal. But when a woman makes some sort of interpersonal issue a problem, then we can't let it go. We're like, oh, that woman, she's such a bleh.
Well, it's in our nature to correct women and help them to, you know, ascend to their full potential. Isn't that what men are?
The kitchen?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
In the kitchen?
You know, that's why we invented the blender and the microwave and the oven, right?
The iron. No.
And on that cheery note, we're going to hit our heads against a piece of furniture and take a break. And when we come back, it will be our trending topic. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Available now from Hero House Books, Mixed Shrinks, Ridiculous Real-Life Stories from Shrinks. Have you ever wanted to read funny stories from a bunch of shrinks? Well, neither have we, but somehow it made it into a book. And it's a great book, too. Shrinks share some of their funniest true-life stories, and we've got some doozies. It's Mixed Shrinks, available now at HeroHousePublishing.com or Amazon. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen along with Emma Kate Wright, Frank the Psych Weasel, and Jonathan Hederle. And our trending topic today is the movie The Accountant with Ben Affleck. And we're really talking about the depiction of people on the spectrum, the autism spectrum, Asperger's, and so on. And, you know, there's a long history of depiction of folks on the spectrum in movies. Rain Man was probably the one that comes to mind. The movie Adam was more recent. Guardians of the Galaxy, potentially. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Ben X. A bunch of other films
Girl
like
with the
that.
What was it? The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And is...
it was the girl.
I never did... Okay, I never saw that, but
E.T.
was that?
And
it was a very good portrayal of an Asperger girl.
So, to you, Frank, of the movies that you've seen, you're the spectrum expert here. What has been the best depiction you've seen on film? And you can also answer what has been your favorite film in this kind of subgenre.
I think Ben Eakes, it's spelled Ben with that letter X, is the best depiction of Asperger's I've ever seen, of a teen who doesn't know he's Aspie and is horrifically bullied. And I mean, it's a really hard movie to watch. It's not appropriate for kids. It's based on a true story. I thought all the sensory troubles, even his just journey to figure it out, as well as Mary and Max, the claymation video about a pen pal relationship between an Aspie old guy and a younger Asperger girl, also based on a true story. They were just amazing. Adam, I did not like. I thought it was portrayed poorly and inconsistently and a bit too stereotypically.
Yeah. Did we saw Mary and Max at it was either a film festival or it was some kind of event.
Was that
I
the
remember
manor?
That.
Or I, yeah. No, no, no.
It was at the somewhere. Well, it was like the film factory or
imagine
the light factory or something like that. But mm-hmm. The point being that we saw it in a theater, which is rare to see a short claymation film like that, but it was very moving. Like the mm-hmm. experience in the theater was like, it was very emotionally moving. I wasn't really ready for that. I thought it was really good. How about
the
others of you, Jonathan or Emma Kate, any movies in that list or others that you really liked that were depicting Asperger's or autism in film? Any stand out for you?
Well, I mean, I have one, but it's kind of cheating. It's Temple Grandin, the HBO that they did.
You mean the movie about autism?
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah, good one.
Nailed it.
I haven't seen as many as Frank, and I'll be honest, the ones that I have seen, I really just, I feel like it's a cheap, lazy way of giving somebody a quirk, or it's really portrayed in a goofy, laughing manner. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me is I Am Sam with Sean Penn, and it's just, it's so, to me, it's so fluff. And so whenever it's something like someone on the spectrum or addiction or even mental health, like, I know there's not one universal way to present it, but for me, it has to feel like it's integral to the character versus almost like clothing they just added on for a lazy way of character development.
Yeah, I think it needs to feel authentic in the sense that it's not going to fit every quote-unquote checkbox on like a diagnostic criteria. There needs to be some nuances, and you need to see how that really kind of impacts their life in a negative way, but then also I like to see when they look at it in a positive way.
Frank, you wrote a comic with Ryan Kelly about a kid named Max Gamer who becomes a superhero, and it looks like, and full disclosure, we've not seen the movie The Accountant yet, but it looks like this is kind of a little bit in that same vein where you've got a guy who is on the spectrum who is kind of like a Jason Bourne character, almost superhero-like. Do you feel like this is an evolution in cinema? Like, do you feel like this is something that is growth in terms of how spectrum folks are depicted? Do you think it's just laziness? Like, how do you see it?
I hope it's growth, because it's what I've been saying all along. And if they portray it right, it would just be, it would do so many good things for kids who are Aspie and adults. But in the past, it seems like it's primarily been portrayed as Big Bang Theory, goofing on people, even Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. That's just for comic relief. But if you also look under the surface of those portrayals, what they're doing is absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm hoping that this is a portrayal of a hero on the spectrum, because people are recognizing there are individuals that we are surrounded by that can do things better and longer than anybody else. And if we don't have them, we're screwed.
I'm with Frank in thinking that I'm hoping it moves towards a very positive portrayal of people on the spectrum, where we can really hit in and hone in on the strengths and how, you know, this person, the account looks super intelligent on Einstein level. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm hopeful too, and it'll be interesting to see how it gets portrayed. Frank, you have talked a lot about feeling like Asperger's and the spectrum in general is a step forward in human evolution.
Yes.
Do you, and a lot of people know that about you, but can you explain that a little bit about why you see it to be that and not a disorder per se?
The quick version of it is, if you look at people in history who are on the spectrum, that skill set they have, starting with Ben Franklin or Sir Isaac Newton, that skill set is very valuable to our society. And the more technological our society becomes, the more that brain is valued and the more dollars that go to that brain. If you look at Silicon Valley, it's like Asperger's City. And the women who fall in love with those men are very intelligent, but also socially skilled, because they want to care for someone. So it's a teacher, nurse, psychologist, or social worker. If you pair a high social, high IQ woman with a high IQ, low social man over generations, then you get high IQ, high social people that you can't compete with. And I call it human 2.0. And I think Asperger's is an evolutionary step toward those people that I do think still exist, that exist now.
Do you see that happening already where, like, in The Accountant, he's a guy who has almost like savant skills with numbers, but then he's a bit of a badass just when things start to go haywire. Mm-hmm. Do you see some of the stuff happening now where, whether it's with cyber security, cyber war stuff, with other things where Spectrum folks are increasingly becoming kind of at the forefront of the battle, as it were?
I think so. I mean, the Israeli Defense Forces hired autistic people who are nonverbal to listen into codes from, I believe, the Palestinians, because their computers weren't picking up, but the autistic people did pick it up. And you've got Messi, he's the top soccer player in the world. He's an Aspie. And so it's not the stereotype of clumsy. You can go out there and be a badass because you can read the field or you can read the battlefield better than anybody else. There's a lot of military guys that are on the spectrum too, especially Air Force and Navy.
Why so?
Well, that's the more technological arm, but also you don't need to worry about those social nuances as much as you have this structured top-down, expectations are clear, you get up at this time, you do these things, it's mechanical, predictable, and that is like a perfect world for some Aspies, not all, but some.
Sounds good. I tell you what, why don't we watch this movie, and then we'll double back and give our reviews of it, and also talk about how it stacked up in terms of how good a depiction it was of someone on the spectrum.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
All right. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, it's going to be our doctor's orders. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Available now from Hero House Books, Cinemanalysis by Craig Pohlman and Josh Jensen. Cinemanalysis connects films to psychology through double features. These are movies paired because they share striking amounts of cinematic DNA, as if they were separated at birth. Each chapter describes a double feature, including why the movies can be appreciated more by viewing them together. Then psychological ideas are illustrated through the paired films. Pick up Cinemanalysis at HeroHousePublishing.com or Amazon.com. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen along with Frank the Psych Weasel, Emma Kate Wright, and Jonathan Hederle. And we wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Jonathan, do you have something for us?
I have a couple things. One is the new Bon Iver album, 22 A Million, has dropped. And I think it's a really inventive and interesting piece of music. It's kind of like his previous stuff, but he continues to build, and he's taken away more of that lush pastoral sound, and he's added more EDM and electronica to it, but it's really interesting. I highly recommend that. But I also want to shout out for those that are in Charlotte, a local movie theater, Arsley Cinemas. Throughout the whole month of October, each week they have retro horror films showing at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. The first week of October, they're showing The Omen and Rosemary's Baby. And the week this episode drops, they are showing at 7 p.m. every night Alien, and at 9 p.m. every night Aliens. And they're going to be showing The Lost Boys, Evil Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and the first two Halloween movies all the way up to Halloween. So if you're in Charlotte, you need to check out the retro horror at Arsley Cinema.
I have a recommendation too for a new single. I have a new recommendation for Dylan Francis. He recently came out with a single in mid-September. It's called Anywhere, featuring Will Hurd. This is for those of you who like dance music, EDM. It's very catchy and upbeat. So if you're interested in checking out a new song, that's a good one.
And my recommendation is just one song. It is Jolene by Dolly Parton and Pentatonix. And if you want a really cool version of that classic song, I would go for it. So Jolene by Dolly Parton and Pentatonix. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk, or you can like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. And of course, you can check us all out on shrinktank.com, where you'll find all kinds of articles about all kinds of cool things in pop culture. Our engineer and audio wizard is Zach Brown. Our theme music was composed by Sean Beck. For Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Heatherly, and Frank the Psych Weasel, I'm Dave Verhagen. You guys have a great week. Thank you.